Hey, what's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Trance. He covers the team for The Athletic as well. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650, of course, is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and you can send your thoughts in to the Dunbar Lumber text line. Big show coming up, lots to get into after a bit of an extended absence for our show. Haven't been on the air in a few days, so we'll get to a couple of Canucks victories, some interesting rumors and reports out there. Landon Ferraro will join us in studio at 12:30, so looking forward to that. Always fun to have Landon in studio. Drance, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. I you know what? I'm American Thanksgiving. First of all, we took so much time off. It feels like it's been a long time since we did a show together. Mm-hmm. Hope you had a great show Thursday and enjoyed your long weekend. But also, American Thanksgiving week is so good because of all the daytime sports.
There's a lot of sports on at different times.
Yeah, at 9 a.m. Yeah. I'm watching games. At 12 a.m. I'm watching games. It's great. It's great. And now I am checking and it's like there's nothing on till 4.
Cold, hard reality back at it.
Yeah, the cold, hard existence that we usually live in.
Yes.
Where days aren't easily fillable with nonsense on television. And I'm quite upset about it, to be honest with you. It's an adjustment. I feel like a post-Thanksgiving hangover.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Post-American Thanksgiving.
That's true. Must,
hangover.
Must distinguish.
Craving those sports. I get it.
I am. Absolutely.
After a couple of early ones for the Canucks as well over the last few days.
I could have gone without the Sunday at 9:30, by the way.
Yeah, that was a little much.
Just another East Coast time for sports watching is better example.
What do you mean it's a little much?
It's a little too early.
I think it's pretty self-explanatory.
You roll out of bed, turn on the TV, you don't have to do anything. How is that much?
Well, yeah, but I mean, so...
Games. It's too early for a game. 9:30? Way too early for a game.
I'm just not in the mood for hockey at that point. Like, roll out of bed. I'm watching the F1. I've got a second screen going. It's Man City, Liverpool. And then I have to flip away to watch hockey. And I have to work, so
up
I don't get to watch the 10 a.m. Sunday slate. Come on. It's bad. 12:30? Perfect. 9:30? Too much. Too early.
All right. Let's go right to the whiteboard here.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, December 2nd. Starting with the headlines, Canucks claim another road win yesterday in that early one. In overtime, second consecutive win in overtime on this road trip, this time against the Red Wings. 5-4 is the final score, and they improve to 4-1 on their current six-game road trip. And we can get into the details from yesterday's game, lots of individual player performances to talk about over the last few days as well. We can dig into the underlying process for the Canucks, but I think the big picture thing here is with one game remaining on this road trip, and it's a very difficult one against the league-leading Minnesota Wild tomorrow. Operation Hold the Fort has been a tremendous success, picking up 4 victories already on this road trip. So you're guaranteed to come home with at least 8 points out of a possible 12. And considering the circumstances, and of course, we were talking about Hold the Fort before Filip Hronek was injured, right? And you added another key injury to the mix for the Canucks, considering the circumstances. They did get Besser back,
yeah.
Sure, but still.
Yeah, no. The point is that even you get Besser back and it's like, well, that's a boost.
Yeah.
Nope.
Nope.
You're out a top pair defenseman now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So considering those circumstances, the Canucks have to be very, very pleased just with the record. And again, there's lots of stuff in the underlying performance. I think that it's fair to maybe have a little bit of concern about. But
forget the underlying
the fact that you pack.
You've watched these games. Right? I mean, it is, they have...
Sure, but I mean, independent of the results.
Independent, well, and that's the point,
yeah.
Right? Is that this was a road trip where you go 2-3 at this juncture, which, you know, easily could have occurred, right? Or 2-2-1, which might be, frankly, a more accurate reflection of their form, right? And, you know, things look a little bit different for the Canucks. Not significantly different, because you'd still like this team's chances of... you know, having a strong run down the stretch, et cetera, but, you know, you get 3 fewer points on this trip, the way that I sort of just outlined it, you know, one extra regulation loss and one additional overtime loss, and you're behind the Oilers and the Flames by points, right? You're definitely behind the Kings and probably the Oilers by point percentage. I mean, you'd be positioned sort of more squarely in the mix in the at the top of the Pacific. Instead, Vancouver's closed ground on everybody, including Vegas, who had a brutal performance at home on Saturday, losing 6-0 to the Utah Hockey Club. And, you know, like, you've gained a point. Like, Vegas has been hot. LA has been hot, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the Canucks have gained points on them over the course of this road trip without JT Miller, without Thatcher Demko back yet, and with Besser and Hronek effectively swapping places in the lineup after playing two games together in Boston and Pittsburgh. I mean, incredibly important in the context of Vancouver's positioning. And yet, you know, I do think their performance itself has been, mm-hmm. like, gutty, gritty, opportunistic, but, you know, something where if you're not going to start to get some of these guys back soon, it you know, could become a problem. You're probably not going to keep chugging along, scraping away sort of one goal wins, yep. over you know, teams at the bottom tier of the league, as the sample expands. Like, this is going to get tough if the club can't. I guess that's the other thing, you know. I've talked a lot about, like, playing the right way to the team's own, mm-hmm. internal standard, and I still don't know that they've done that. This hasn't been...
At least not for consistent stretches.
No.
Right? There's always been letdowns or things you don't like in these games, even as they've continued to find a way to win them.
Well, their 5-on-5 game has frankly sprung a leak, right? The non-Hughes minutes have become additionally problematic. Really, they've only got one line regularly controlling play, and it's that Suter-Garland, mm-hmm. combination at the moment. And, you know, as a result, they, like, haven't outscored teams at 5-on-5, even though they're kind of shooting the lights out. They've needed their power play to be really good, but it isn't actually generating much. Like, they missed JT Miller on the power play.
Yep.
Make no mistake. But they've got 5 goals on this road trip, in part because, you know, if you need someone to find, you know, those services like Ring Finder.
No.
If you lose your engagement ring, every city has, like, ring finders that specialize in retrieving them. That's Jake DeBrusk at the moment, right? Like, if there's loose change
at the net front, he's getting it.
Every single bit of loose change, Jake DeBrusk is finding and potting in the back of the net. And, you know, they've needed, like, every morsel of that, right? I thought their penalty kill was poor against Detroit. I think their team defensive game has been too permissive. And they're 5-on-5. They're not controlling play. There's way too much one and done. There's not the usual racking up OZP that the Canucks have been able to do over the course of this, you know, wildly impressive road trip. So I think you're seeing some leaks form. Significant ones. But to this point, the Canucks have, like, one finger in one part of the dam, another finger in another part of a dam. They're using their toe like someone's put their head against it.
Mm-hmm.
And for now anyway, they're keeping water out of the
out of the fort.
Yeah, out of the vehicle. Yeah, let's
mix the metaphors.
First of all, iMac is going to arrest us, and secondly, you know, I love a forced metaphor.
Absolutely. We've used the word or the phrase holding pattern already a fair bit for this team. And, yep. like, even since we started using it, it's become even more of a holding pattern, right? Where it's like, okay, because I think the unknowns have only increased right now with Filip Hronek. And we'll get to the latest on his status here later on in the whiteboard, right? And the uncertainty around it, obviously the uncertainty around JT Miller, the uncertainty around what Thatcher Demko will look like. I think we now probably expect him to make his debut on Friday against Columbus when they're back home. I don't want to, like, lock that in or anything, but it seems to be pointing that direction.
I always thought home was most likely, mm-hmm. just where the conditions are such that you can control it a little better in terms of recovery. You know, and again, this was just me reading between the lines, mm-hmm. knowing what we know about how, like, scientific and thoughtful Thatcher Demko is, holistic he is in sort of how he thinks about rehab, recovery. I just felt to me like this is a guy who, I'm sure, if he's going to get back into the net for the first time, I mean, he's only played three games since March,
yep.
Of 2024. You know, wouldn't you rather be at home where you have perfect control over exactly what your recovery looks like? I would. So I just assumed that was the case.
But
we'll see.
I mean, those are three major unknowns, and not just unknowns because they're out of the lineup, right? But especially in Hronek's and Demko's case, right? Like, Hronek, it's timeline, but then also when will he be not just in the lineup but effective again? Demko, that's certainly a case as well. And then Miller, it's a mysterious timeline as well. It could be when they're back home, but we've also heard, hey, maybe don't expect it right away. So there's a lot that not only do we not know right now, but it could, like, they're not necessarily questions you're going to get answers to in the short term, right? So I'm almost looking now at, you know, hold the fort or whatever you want to call it. Like, that kind of extends to the rest of December for me, right? Like, I think we'll, the earliest possible chance for us to say we have like a much better handle on what this team is going to look like is probably into January at this point, before we even start to get answers to some of these questions.
For sure. Well, and you're right. We don't know the timeline on JT Miller. We don't know the timeline on Filip Hronek. We think Thatcher Demko's close, and I wouldn't be surprised if this week is the week he gets back, but we don't know. We don't have that locked in. And then you sort of throw in the inconsistent performances, right? Like, and that's sort of part of this too. It's been really cool to see the individual players that have stepped up on this road trip. You know, you've got Garland, DeBrusque, Pew Suter, you know, Elias Pettersson, I think you should throw in there. Yep. And then the fact that Quinn Hughes is such a force, such an engine for this team, that in some ways, you know, not that Miller, Demko, Hronek aren't important to this team. They obviously are. But the floor isn't going to fall out on this team while Quinn Hughes is doing this. And I think that's been a big part of what we've seen on this road trip. It's why even when the Canucks show up and play like they did in the first period against the Red Wings, they're able to sort of turn it around, right? Even when they have a first period like they have in Pittsburgh, they're able to turn around. Even when they cough up a lead the way they did in Buffalo, you know, Quinn Hughes comes out and just completely controls the 3-on-3, which he did again in Detroit, by the way. And you know, we'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a later segment. The, you know, abilities that this guy's had to just create this floor of like strong playoff team because you have Quinn Hughes and no one else does. That I think has been one of the big takeaways from this past week. But that said, this isn't one of those, we're shorthanded, so we're really going to focus in defensively and level up our defensive game and lock it down. And, you know, that's not what this road trip has been.
No.
In a lot of ways, Vancouver's
in the last two wins,
form.
What, seven goals against in the last two wins? You know what I mean?
Well, plus the four goals against in the first period against Pittsburgh. Yep. You know, the Boston game. I mean, I thought the Bob Bruins finishing game and Vancouver's defensive effort was there for the most part, keeping them on the outside. But, I mean, they got crushed by volume. You know what it feels like a little bit to me, actually? This is where I get just a little bit nervous about it. Is it feels to me like that stretch that the New York Rangers had, which included the win over Vancouver, and then they go into Calgary, and that game looked kind of like the Bruins game did for Vancouver, and then they go into Edmonton, just stomps them. Now, Vancouver hasn't had the stomping, but it feels like that to me, where it's like,
You're getting results, but there's the warning signs there.
Well, and there's warning signs of every variety. There's warning signs in terms of like killing a game against Ottawa. You know, allowing Boston to generate untold volume against you, allowing Pittsburgh to put up a crooked number against you, right? And then, you know, allowing Buffalo to come back against you when you've got a 2-goal lead, and then falling behind against Detroit largely because your penalty kill springs a leak, right? And it's just like every game has, they've been able to overcome it, and credit to them, because it matters a ton in terms of their positioning. And we know that this team isn't close to the final product of the team that we're talking about, you know, in terms of their championship aspirations, et cetera, down the stretch. But, you know, I do worry sometimes when you've got a team that's like getting battered by different types of issues, all of them at once, that tends to presage or like be an indicator of fortunes about to turn. So we'll see. I mean, Minnesota is going to be a really big test tomorrow. And then they come home and they've got some tough teams coming into Rogers, a building that they haven't performed well into this point in the season. Lots of uncertainty, as you said, still lingering around them. So hopefully this is something that they can arrest before the results turn. But I do think they'll need to arrest it. I do think they'll need to materially get back to playing like better, more structured hockey if they're going to maintain this sort of pace.
A couple of other quick headlines, and I just want to mention Quinn Hughes passing Alex Edler to become the all-time franchise leader for assists by a defenseman. No surprise there. We all knew that was coming, but he gets it done, 500 games quicker than Alex Edler got to that mark. Also, Quinn Hughes named second star of the week by the NHL, and I do think it's worth parking some time later in the show to talk about Quinn Hughes and just the overall impact he's having on the team right now. The other thing I wanted to mention, Canucks prospect Sawyer Mineau invited officially to the Team Canada selection camp for the World Juniors. We've talked about him a little bit a couple of times, just the way he's improved his stock and shown off more of his offensive game since he was drafted by the Canucks. And I think you look at most observers, people who follow this closely, they seem to think he's got a pretty good shot to be on Team Canada at the World Juniors.
Yeah, but not because of his offensive game.
No.
And that's key. But, you know, the way that he's spiked offensively as Seattle's been hollowed out talent-wise, I think speaks to maybe him having an NHL-level floor. And then it's really the defense, right? The defensive side of the game, the physical attributes, the leadership stuff that he's got in spades, apparently, that give him a shot to not just make Team Canada, but potentially have an NHL future. Yeah, looks like he's in with a very good shot. They left some really good defenders.
Yes.
Off of this roster, including Parekh, the Calgary Flames defender. I suspect that's one of those like Hockey Canada ones that we'll be shaking our head at. That one in particular,
yeah.
That guy's one of the best prospects I've seen play in a couple of years.
Well, and I was just thinking about Hockey Canada decisions that we don't agree with. Are we going to get some of those this week? We'll see.
Almost surely
we will in a couple of days. Okay.
Get ready to learn some Travis Sanheim, bud.
Get ready to slander Travis Sanheim. Maybe. We'll see.
I was born ready for that.
You are all over that one?
Yeah.
All right. We do have a quick update here, by the way, from St. Louis Blues reporter Andy Strickland, who just says USA Hockey fully expects Canucks forward JT Miller to be available for the upcoming Four Nations tournament. That's just a report there from Andy Strickland. So good for JT Miller, obviously, that, you know, his personal leave right now isn't going to stop him from being selected to the team. I mean, that's the tournament's not till February, so doesn't really tell us much about his timeline, but just a little bit of an update there from Andy Strickland that doesn't look like it's going to be a roadblock for JT Miller and his selection to the Four Nations team for Team USA. Okay, to the broadsheet portion of things here in the white on the whiteboard. First, we'll start with Filip Hronek, all right? Rick Dhaliwal reporting today on Donnie and Dolly that the team is talking to many different doctors, or at least a few different doctors, about Filip Hronek, perhaps trying to determine if the injury needs surgery or not, which of course would change the timeline. So really the team doesn't know the timeline right now. And Elliot Friedman, who was on with Donnie and Dolly, kind of echoed the same thing, saying the team is still trying to determine exactly what the timeline is, but they don't think it'll be short. And I know Dan Murphy, who's on the road with the Canucks, reported that Filip Hronek stayed with the team in Detroit, but he has since returned home to Vancouver. So, reports there, but basically seeking multiple opinions from doctors, kind of trying to figure out exactly the best way to tackle this injury. And we've heard long-term, we've heard, you know, it's not going to be short on Filip Hronek. We don't know exactly what it is yet, but everything is pointing to an uncertain timeline right now at the moment for Hronek.
Yeah, and so we'll just sort of wait. Dan Murphy, as you mentioned, reporting that he's returned to Vancouver to consult with more specialists. So, yeah, I mean, look, we've seen Hronek's absence, I think, play a pretty significant role for this team. I thought their performances in Buffalo and Detroit were deeply uneven in a way that I'm not sure if they were on, even in Boston and Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, they were just getting beat so badly that it was kind of different.
Yes.
Whereas... you know, it looked like they were missing some clicks off their fastball in a more material way, for me anyway, in Detroit and in Buffalo. We talked about, the last show we did, we talked about in Pittsburgh, right? You want to manage this game. You need to, like, start strong so that you don't have to chase it late. Obviously,
the opposite
happened. And then in the last minute of the game, you've got Quinn Hughes and Hronek having played 25-plus minutes, and Hronek's beneath the goal line when he gets hit into the boards and hurt. And like, that's... not that he got hurt because they fell behind, but he wouldn't have played that much, and he wouldn't have been in that spot if the Canucks had been able to keep that game close. Like, that was a hugely costly first period compounded by an injury to a player. You know, you don't draw a direct line because hockey injuries can happen at any moment, especially when you're a relatively physical. Like, no one talks about Filip Hronek being like this snarly physical defender, but let's be real. He's always in the way. He plays with some edge. That could happen anywhere, but It does sort of just illustrate that point of how important it is to manage games, especially when you're facing a brutally condensed slate of, of contests on the road.
Okay, still in the broadsheet and onto the Niels Hoglander portion of things, and more buzz around Hoglander's name on the trade market, and we're hearing from both Elliot Friedman and Rick Dhaliwal that Pittsburgh is a team that's interested. Elliot Friedman name-checking Columbus as an interested team as well, and also passing along this note that the fact that Hoglander is signed with term beyond this year, right, he's got the three-year deal that kicks in after this year, might actually be making him more appealing to some of these teams that are interested in acquiring his services, which is, one, speaks to I think the level of interest these teams have in Hoglander, right? Like, they see a player worth betting on in the future there, but also I think it speaks to the changing salary cap environment as well around the NHL, that we're back to a place where cost certainty and term can actually be a benefit for a player rather than a hindrance.
Did you see the Kevin Weeks tweet about Niels Hoglander drawing trade interest?
Yes.
And he noted that among the teams interested are the Washington Capitals.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington Capitals pro scouting department likes your player. Don't trade that player. Just as a general rule.
Mm-hmm.
General rule. If the sharpest evaluators in hockey are all like, ooh, he might be available.
Well, and people hear Pittsburgh, right? And then we know Marcus Pedersen is on the block, and he's, you know, you can draw the connection, right? But if Hoglander for Pedersen, if that framework was enticing enough to the Canucks.
Yeah, it would be done.
Yeah, it would be done, right? Correct. So it's like, I don't see that happening just because Hoglander's in Tocchet's doghouse right now, right? Like, they could have made that deal five times over if that was what they wanted to do. And
yes,
we're talking about the respect and the interest that some of these other pro scouting departments have in Niels Hoglander. Well, we know the Canucks front office has as well. They signed him to a deal.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're going to give up on him for a song here. Look, we all see what's happening on the ice and with the minutes, so it's not out of the question to think he might get traded here, but I don't think they're going to dramatically lower their price because of that either.
Yeah, they extended him, and I believe that there are players much better than Marcus Pedersen that the Canucks have been reluctant to include Niels Hoglander in deals to acquire.
Yeah.
So, an interesting one. The usage problem and the fact that Hoglander has yet to really respond positively
mm-hmm.
to his dipping usage does get to a point, and this is something that did happen to Kuzmenko, and I think it happened with Sprong too, although with Sprong it was more a throw your hands up and there's nothing we can do here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think that they're there with Hoglander in terms of the Canucks coaching staff, but you can get to a point, and this organization has got to a point, where a player's declining usage and inability to get out of that spiral becomes what the club views as a distraction. And when that happens, we have actually seen this club be pretty quick to move on, to rip the Band-Aid off, as it were, and get away from
mm-hmm.
anything that would take away from the overall hockey environment. So I'm really fascinated to watch this play out exactly, because Hoglander's ice time remains brutally scant.
Yeah.
And his performance hasn't really dictated more.
No.
Even though I know, and I think the team knows, and we should all have a pretty good sense of this, that Hoglander is still a really good player.
It's a bad sign that, you know, I pull up the like natural stat trick looking at the time on ice numbers after the game, and I'm like, oh, 10 minutes for him. Pretty good. Like, that's an improvement. That's better from where he's been over the last couple of games
and,
before that.
And like, his teammates think this guy should be like a top line or top six power play one guy, and think most teams in the league would put him in that spot. You know what I mean? Like, they think it's a reflection of their depth. Like, there's a lot of regard for this guy among his teammates, the people who practice with him every day, who see the skill set close up. And look, I don't think Tockett's been like a Hoglander skeptic, frankly, although he got scratched in the playoffs and his usage was pretty low last season. You know, he still got significant opportunities at camp early in the year. He just needs to get out of this funk. I don't get the sense that this one is like irreparable. Like it was with Kuzmenko or Sprong. I feel like there's a way forward with Hoglander in Vancouver based off of just sort of what I'm hearing, but I'm sure that everyone's patience is getting mm-hmm. roundly tested at the moment.
Okay, we got to get to break here because Landon Ferraro is coming in studio with us in the next segment, so we can park some of the lineup notes and maybe an odds update or a playoff odds update for later on in the show. Before we go to break, this is very exciting. Sportsnet 650 and Barnside Brewing have dropped the gloves on a new pale ale that's perfect for hockey season. The brand new 5 for Fighting Hazy Pale. The crisp and refreshing Hazy Pale Ale is a celebration of flavor and and balance. Brewed with our own farm-grown hops, it boasts a delightful harmony of fruity and floral notes. Each sip hints at the juicy essence of ripe peach, complemented by a soft, velvety mouthfeel that keeps you coming back for more. Four packs will be available starting December 9th at Barnside Brewing Tap Room, participating retail locations, or on tap at your local pub. There you go. You can get your official Sportsnet 650 beer from Barnside Brewing just in time for the holidays. All right, we'll take a break. Landon Ferraro in studio with us here next on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.